The opinions expressed in the Spirited Sports Podcast are individual and are not necessarily representative of Spirit Live or Toronto Metropolitan University. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to Spirited Sports. Toldy Kakaletris, Nick DiCicco, Elias Drakos, and many more break down the biggest moments, game-changing plays, and the stories behind the athletes. Whether you live for the thrill of victory, the hustle of the underdog, or just love a great sports conversation, you're in the right place. This is Spirited Sports.
Hello, everybody. How's it going? And welcome back to another episode of Spirited Sports.
Elias, what's the latest regarding Sidney Crosby?
Yeah, as for Sidney Crosby, of course, he suffered that injury playing with Team Canada. That was very tough, and he's going to be out at least 4 weeks for the Pittsburgh Penguins. The 38-year-old center was injured during the second period of Team Canada's 4-3 OT win against Team Czechia in the quarterfinals at the Olympic Games on February 18th. He missed a 3-2 win against Team Finland in the semifinals on Friday, and then, of course, did not play in the gold medal game when Canada lost against the United States.
Thoughts on what this means now for Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh's in a tight playoff race in the Metro. For sure, with Carolina, with the Islanders, right there in the middle of things in that Metro Division. This is definitely a tough break for Pittsburgh, especially in this tough playoff race that they're in right now in Metro. Do you think the Islanders catch up if with Crosby out and the leadership kind of out of the way? Does it give the Islanders a chance to jump over the Penguins?
Like, the Metro in the East is very tight, especially heading down this last stretch of hockey. Given that Crosby is going to be out for, I don't know, the next 12 to 15 games with 26 games remaining for the Pittsburgh Penguins, if the Islanders can add another either veteran or depth forward from the trade deadline to give them some offensive boost, I mean, the way the Islanders have been playing going into the Olympic break, I think absolutely they could overtake the Penguins in the standings.
Could the Capitals sneak in? Because they're only 3 points back of the Penguins. Capitals are on the outside looking in with the third wild card spot with 67 points. Penguins only have 70. But again, Sidney Crosby is an elite player, an elite captain, a very, very motivational aspect to this Pittsburgh Penguins team.
He's their leading scorer.
He's the leader.
38 years old.
Yep. So
they're going to get in. Washington's going to get in Pittsburgh's.
I think the Blue Jackets even have a chance at this point. I mean, okay, they're five back of Pittsburgh, right? But no, Sidney Crosby's a game changer. Like you just mentioned, he's a leader in scoring for the Pens. So anything can happen. We'll see.
Yep.
Sam Girard to the Penguins by the Avalanche for Brett Kulak. This is an absolute steal for Pittsburgh. Unbelievable.
So this was a pure cap trade, I assume, for the Avalanche, trying to clear up some cap going into the trade deadline, because, I mean, they had to throw in a second-round pick to Pittsburgh just for Pittsburgh to take on the salary.
Yeah.
Right? So what is the Avalanche planning on doing going into the trade deadline? Are they looking to bring back Nazem Kadri?
They already have an elite team, right? Natchez, McKinnon, McCarr,
yep.
Brock Nelson. So many players that they brought in last year. And the team that we thought was going to be so dominant to end the season didn't reach that expectation. But this year, mass improvements to this team. Incredible how well they performed. No?
Yeah, no, I agree. And with Kulak obviously going to Colorado, Kulak makes $2.25 million, less than Girard. The Avalanche now has some room, like I said, to make another move. Puckpedia projects that they'll have $2.3 million in cap space. So Colorado maybe won't have necessarily a ton of space to make a season-altering move unless they clear up more cap. But with Kulak already adding some postseason experience, a depth forward with some retention could be enough to get the Avalanche over the top, I personally think. What do you guys think?
Well, Colorado doesn't have to do much. I think they add another depth piece, mm-hmm. and I think they're good to go. They're 6 points up on the Stars right now with two games in hand.
Yep.
So they're in a good spot. They're definitely in a good spot. And they're even two games up on the Wild, too, that are 7 points back.
What a master class here by Kyle Dubas. In the trade, Brett Kulak to Colorado and Samuel Girard to Pittsburgh and a second round pick, the Penguins are still looking at around $47 million in cap space this summer. They also remarkably have 16 picks in the top three rounds over the next three drafts, even after Dubas traded two of those picks for the very impressive Igor Chinakov 2 months ago. Elias.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, overall, it's clearly a win for the Penguins, getting Sam Girard, you know, 3 goals, 9 assists, 12 points, averaging 17.41 of ice time in 40 games. I like the move, and yeah, on Colorado's end, I mean, hey, Brett Kulak, great former Hub.
Reliable guy.
Reliable guy, I mean, obviously.
Stay-at-home defenseman.
Stay-at-home defenseman. I think that's not a bad way to describe
it. Good in the room.
I was just about to say that. Yeah. Excellent guy in the room.
Well-respected.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great.
The USA...
They dominated every other team.
Exactly. And let's not forget in the rivalry series earlier in the year, which every year they do it, Canada-USA Women's, the U.S. swept Canada in the rivalry series.
Yep.
So going into this gold medal game, I'm thinking to myself, and I'm sure plenty of other people are thinking that this is going to be a blowout win for the USA, not even close. But that was the complete opposite of what happened. The Canadian played their hearts out. They were leading 1-0 for 58 minutes of this game, shutting down the USA with just, I think it was two minutes left in the third period. The USA captain, Hillary Knight, tips it in the back of the net, ties up 1-1, and then we all know what happens next in overtime.
Wasn't that poetic, though, for Hillary Knight in her last Olympics?
To get
the game-tying goal sent to OT.
Yeah, but it could have also been Poulin's last Olympics, too. Who knows?
That's it, too. Yeah, you're right.
Gutted for her.
But you knew going in that this was Hillary Knight's last game. And
correct.
Guaranteed this was it, right? To have the game-tying goal, even I said, wow. Watching it live, I'm like, she's going to tip something in. Because you knew they were buzzing. And that tip in front, and it went in.
I also think, guys, Canada's roster was more veteran heavy, and the U.S., like, as Hillary Knight aside, had it just a generally a younger roster.
I mean, Abby Murphy, what a tournament she had for the USA too. She played unbelievable for them.
Yep.
But one thing I want to add for the women's is how gutted I am for Poulin, because she gets injured earlier in the tournament.
Yeah.
She comes back for Switzerland in the semifinals, scores both goals in that 2-1 victory over Switzerland to advance Canada to the gold medal game. I mean, she was playing on one leg practically. And for her to lose in that fashion, the gold medal game, when Canada, just if they shut it down for two more minutes, would have had the gold medal. I'm just gutted for her, because she's captain clutch here in Canada for the women's team.
Yeah, indeed.
But taking it to the men's, obviously another heartbreaker. What are you guys' thoughts on that game? We all watched it.
Yep. It was a great game. It was a great game for both teams. Canada did play their hearts out, just like the women's side. And a lot of credit has to go to Hellebuck. 42 shots faced in that game. And what did he give up? One? Right?
In the gold medal game?
Yeah.
Yep.
The one, yeah. Well, the most memorable save, in my opinion, being the stick. Taking away, I forget who was...
Taves.
And the stick comes out of nowhere, denies Taves of scoring. And you're like, it just watching that game, it just felt like chance after chance after chance, and just no real breakthrough until the third period, obviously, when they scored. Yeah. But it was tough to watch.
But that Makar goal, I got to say something about the Makar goal, is Canada was shooting on Hellebuck's left side. So often during the power play leading up, and pretty much that entire period, they were shooting that left side of Hellebuck. And then Makar just rips it to the right side of Hellebuck, and he scores right over the pad with a perfect shot with some traffic in front.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
It was almost picture perfect chance.
And listen, credit to Hellebuck, right? A lot of credit to Hellebuck. But I also think credit to Binnington. I think people have kind of forgotten about the tournament he's had.
He was
unbelievable.
He played great.
Especially that save on Quinn Hughes earlier in that overtime. That game in overtime could have been done earlier than it was. Yeah. But when I look back on this game, like Canada's depth versus Finland versus Czechia, they came up big and they produced. Mitch Marner versus Czechia, Nick Suzuki versus Czechia, Theodore tying it up versus Finland. And when you look at this gold medal game, it's so frustrating because the top dogs just couldn't get it done. McDavid misses breakaway. They don't score 5-on-3 when you have all those stars. The top guys just couldn't get it done. And that's what's so frustrating because Canada has some of the best players in the world on that team.
If McKinnon takes that shot another 100 times, he takes it 99 times out of 100.
Sure.
The gold medal game was exactly the date to the 1980 Miracle on Ice.
That's right.
A little too ironic, isn't it, Nick?
Yeah.
Just a little bit ironic. I'm not.
Not a good omen for USA, obviously.
Yeah, clearly, right?
But... huge.
And that was a bunch of amateur players playing for USA at the time, too, on that team, which is why it was the Miracle on Ice. Mm-hmm. And sorry if I pronounced this wrong, but Urizone, who scored the game-winning goal on the Miracle on Ice, that guy was an amateur player, and he made a name out of himself and a career out of himself from that goal for the rest of his life. And he's promoted it. He sold it. I mean, that's his business, promoting that goal, right?
Yep.
So Jack Hughes scoring an even bigger goal, gold medal game in the Olympics, the golden goal. Could Jack Hughes be the face of the NHL now moving forward, especially if he plays good in New Jersey?
Maybe. Right? Jack, it's funny with Jack Hughes because he's got a lot of ties to Canada. Right, and Toronto. He used to play for the Marlboros.
Parents moved from Michigan to Ontario so the boys could play hockey in Ontario and develop.
So there was that, and then he scores the golden goal against Canada, and he's dating Tate McRae.
What a life for him, eh?
What a life! I think it was a fairly entertaining game.
Let's talk about Max Scherzer.
Mad Max.
Yeah.
Resides with the Jays, a one-year deal, $3 million.
Way cheaper than his one-year 15 the year before. The $15 million.
Yeah, but keep in mind, though, you were saying earlier, the signing bonus, it could be worth $10 million.
Could go up to 10.
No, it's still way cheaper than 15. I agree, but
was that 15 outright, or
last year?
I think it was
15 outright.
Okay.
One year, 15.
Okay. Sorry, Nick. Go ahead. Looks like you want to say something.
This was a good deal for Toronto. I think, you know, I said it when we were discussing Jay's free agent options, unfinished business, and I think that's why he came back. But he came back to Toronto.
Yep.
Unfinished business. The Jays want another shot at the World Series, and Scherzer wants that shot too. When it came down to the most important games, he got it done.
He in my mind, is 0% blame for that Game 7 lost.
Oh, not at all.
No.
He pitched his heart out that game.
Yeah.
But listen, Max Scherzer, he's not going to be asked to make 25 starts this year. He's going to have the odd start here and there.
He's going to be the sixth guy, right?
Exactly. If Barrios is unpitchable, throw him in there. If Bieber is not healthy for the start of the season, he'll get a start here and there.
Does Lauer become the fifth guy? Is Lauer the fifth guy, though?
Could be. Rotation.
I want the order. I want to hear your guys' order from one to, let's say, six, who the guys are.
I'm not going to go in any order in particular, but Cease has to be one.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Ponce has to be another one.
Gausman. So that's three.
Lauer has to be one.
Four.
And four.
Savage.
Yeah.
Savage, that's five.
And then six was...
We could do Lauer or Scherzer.
Scherzer.
But Ponce is a starter, right? I always think Ponce is in the bullpen. I don't know why.
Yeah, he was.
Okay.
Overseas, he was a reliever, yeah.
Right. Now that I think of it, a guy like Bassett would have been helpful to have had lingering around. At first, I'm like, yeah, you know, it was time to go. But when we were going through our head who could have been the sixth, what a guy, man. He could have been out of the bullpen. He could have been starting. He would have been just nice to have had around.
Now, but Bassett needs to be a third or fourth guy. He can't be a fifth or sixth guy.
He could have been.
For the amount of money, though?
He could have been.
What, 19 million ball?
No, I'm saying if he had taken less.
Okay, if he had taken less, yeah.
What if he had taken, let's say, 9 million?
That's the problem, though. He didn't want to be viewed or paid as a sixth guy or a bullpen.
What is his role going to be in Baltimore?
Oh, he'll be a starting pitcher there for sure.
Yeah, he'll be a
third. Is he
going to
be their second or third guy?
I say third or fourth guy.
Yeah, third or fourth for sure.
The Jays right now, in my opinion, have seven options for starters. Okay? Seventh. I was writing them down as I was thinking about them. Cease, Ponce, Lauer, Barrios, Gausman, Scherzer, and Yosavage.
Barrios, I don't know.
He's a wild card.
But here's the thing, though. Cease, Gausman, and Yosavage right now. Three really good pitchers. Again, there's still some question marks I have. Gausman's a year older. I think he's going to be good. Yosavage hasn't pitched a full season yet. We don't know. I've seen really good stuff, and I think he's going to trend in the right direction. You mix Ponce in there, you mix Lauer, you mix a guy like Scherzer. Berríos, maybe a bullpen guy, maybe a starter, who knows? Because again, one of these guys, two of these guys is injured. Maybe he comes in as a starter. They have a lot of options. I love their starting rotation the way it is right now. And, the bullpen I worry about, the offense I worry about.
Bieber, when healthy too, can pitch at a Cy Young caliber level, right?
I miss Bieber.
You see that home run though, too, the other day? Center field, it was like 431 feet.
A great hit.
I want to see Vladdy step up this year and hit some home runs, like more than last year.
Correct.
I'm looking for, I think he's going to step up.
But one arm we keep on forgetting about too is Ricky Tiedemann. Top pitching prospect. Before Yu Savage had this outbreak of a season he had last year, right? Yeah, top pitching prospect in the Blue Jays farm system. Obviously had Tommy John, missed all of last year. But if he can get back to his great form he was pitching like in Buffalo with the Bisons there, could he be a reliever option too that comes in the Jays bullpen sometime this season and be very, very effective?
Well, Bowden Francis is done for the year, right?
That's he's just about to say that. He's done for the year, but what does his role look like in the future, do we think?
For Bowden Francis.
Like, do we think he's going to come back strong the following season? Because I saw some good things from him, not last season, the season before. He was not bad.
I think he becomes a reliable bullpen piece.
I think so too. And he started out in the bullpen, if you remember, with the Jays, and he kind of transitioned. I think he could be in the bullpen again.
All right, sticking to the NFL now. The Atlanta Falcons to release veteran quarterback Kirk Cousins on March 11th. Why not keep him as a safety net, as the veteran backup mentor?
Well, veteran backup, you know, the Falcons kind of need a shift. I mean, if they're able to make a move, bring somebody else in, you know, the draft is coming up, right? So they could draft another QB.
And how are we feeling about Stefanski there, head coach? I really like it.
I like it.
Yeah. Me too.
Why do you like it, Elias?
I agree with you. It was my point that I was thinking about maybe Kirk Cousins could have been that veteran backup.
Yeah.
It was an option that they
had. So before we go to our next topic for football.
Okay, where does Kirk go? Where does Kirk Cousins go? Does he go back to Minnesota?
Well, that's a good question, because once he becomes available, Cousins will join a free agent quarterback market of veterans like Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Joe Flacco. I mean, all four of those players could draw interest from teams, though none of them, with the exception of Rodgers, seem likely to be guaranteed a starting job, right?
Right.
So with the players that I just mentioned, could any of them be interested in joining the Green Bay Packers as a backup option? Because Malik Willis is going to be hitting free agency, and he's projected to get a two-year deal worth $30 million a year.
Yeah.
So I think there could be some mutual interest if Joe Flacco, Russell Wilson, or Kirk Cousins wants a backup job on a solid roster in the Green Bay Packers.
So the Atlanta Falcons, as we said, expected to release Cousins before the new league year in March 2026 to avoid a massive guaranteed salary obligation and gain financial flexibility. By cutting him before mid-March, they avoid a $67.9 million guarantee for 2027. Opting instead to likely move forward, as Nick said, with Michael Penix Jr.
Yeah.
Now, next topic for the NFL, really interesting. This is about as of maybe an hour and a half ago where I first saw this. The Indianapolis Colts and quarterback Anthony Richardson mutually agreed to seek a trade.
I'm not surprised.
Why?
He worked out well for a little bit. It just hasn't worked out in the long run. It just hasn't worked out in the long run.
And he has a hard time staying healthy too, right?
That's
the Indianapolis
it too.
Colts. Yep. And the way Danny Dimes kind of stepped in this year for the Colts and really took the reins as the number one starting QB for that franchise, and the way he played, like MVP caliber, he's the guy in Indianapolis now, and it's clear after this mutual agreement to seek a trade.
When the Colts selected him with the fourth overall pick in 2023, he was projected to be a long-term starter, right? But yeah, like you mentioned, injuries have been a problem. He's been limited to just 15 starts and 17 appearances at 51 games. Wow. 17 appearances at 51 games is not a lot, right? So I think it's understandable why they'd want to move on.
Yeah, you know, you look at it, right? The Colts giving permission to Anthony Richardson to seek a trade. This, you know, signals the end of his tenure. He suffered a season-ending orbital fracture in his eye in 2025 while serving as a backup. Listen to this. During the 2024 season, Richardson had a league worst 47.7% completion rate and was briefly benched. So, is Danny Dimes realistically going to take the Colts on a deep playoff run?
Just the way he played this past season before getting injured for the Colts, it was looking good. And then they go into the trade deadline. They acquire, who do they acquire? Sauce Gardner from the Jets.
Yep.
Given their first round pick to the Jets too. Like, they were all in. That Achilles injury for Danny Dimes hopefully doesn't set him back majorly, because the Colts this year were going to go all in with him.
8-2 start.
Yep.
Right? And then his health became an issue, and then that 7-game losing streak, right? So, yeah, it was tough.
Alrighty, that will do it for the end of this episode of Spirited Sports. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.